beings. We're in the thick of it. We are in the thick of it, and we're simply going to have to think about how to deal with it, which I cannot address on this program, you know, specifically how to deal with it. There have been many suggestions, you know what I'm hinting at. Survival is something we're going to, people around the globe are going to be thinking about surviving this year. That's how bad it's going to be. That's how bad it's becoming already. And heck, it's only the first few days of March. So that's very, very much something to pay attention to. And speaking of things to pay attention to, Parafoggering is waiting to come into Studio 2 here at KBOO Portland, where we broadcast at 90.7 FM across Cascadia and other frequencies in the region. And we also broadcast at KBOO.FM, where you can click on KBOO and become a part of the community, the intentional radio community, by joining at any rate that you prefer. Join the thousands who do so at KBOO.FM, where we broadcast to all the ships at sea.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com. Possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of open.
Tune into Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire, and my name is Per Fograng. And let's start out with 2 weeks ago, my guest was retired CIA analyst Ray McGovern, and he made some very interesting points. And one, which we should never forget, had to do with George Kennan. Now, George Kennan, he was the big foreign policy guru back in the 40s and 50s, a diplomat, ambassador to the Soviet Union or whatever. Actually lived to be 101 years old, I think. He died not that many years ago. But back in 1948, he wrote a kind of a presidential position paper, number 23. And it had to do a lot about strategy with other countries and that. But one thing he said was that, the United States had... this is it. Here's a quote. The U.S. has 50% of the world's wealth, but only 63% of its population. Our real task in the coming period is to devise a pattern of relationships which permits us to maintain this position of disparity. To do so, we will have to dispense with all sentimentality and daydreaming, and our attention will have to be concentrated everywhere on our immediate national objectives. So in other words, he's putting down... We got the loot. We want to keep it, and he's devising ways to do that. Now, a lot of liberals like Kennan because in that paper, he argued against trying to overthrow the Soviet Union. He was more interested. He didn't like the Soviet Union. He just wanted to kind of contain it, you know, kind of keep it in his cage and stuff. So he was sort of opposed to the Republicans of the time who wanted to go out there and conquer the Soviets. And those kind of Republicans are still with us, of course. But the thing to keep in mind is that George Kennan, he certainly wanted to keep our kind of our hogging the resources style of life. He just had a different way of doing it. And it's interesting that this resource ratio hasn't changed. Now, in his original quote, he's talking about wealth, and that could be, you know, probably money. And money, you know, money can wealth can accumulate, but if you're talking about resources, resources do not accumulate. They can only dissipate as you use them up. So if you're talking about money wealth, according to Kennan, the U.S. at that time had 50% of the world's wealth. Well, now we're down to about 25%. Still disparity, but less than before. And but if you're talking about resources, that's just the same ratio applies there. We have 5% of the world's population, but we command 25% of the world's resources. That's an awful lot. And the thing to think about is that that, like I said, resources dissipate, and there is a limit as to how much you can use. If there is a limit, that means more for us means less for everybody else. So that was one great insight, that fact that we brought out with Ray McGovern. Well, you might ask, how did we get in this enviable position? Well, if you look back at American history, we did it through conquest and slavery. That's what started the ball rolling. You know, we took, we grabbed a huge amount of land and resources from the Indians. And we grabbed a huge amount of work, basically work from the African slaves. And, you know, for the settlers who came to this country, it was like a promised land, and it was like a limitless world. The world is yours. All you got to do is go out and take it and make it your own and build on it. And that is sort of the essence of this kind of American attitude, this expansive attitude or hyper-expansive outlook on life. And this lasted for quite a while as we had a land without limits, and then we sort of jumped the border. We grabbed Hawaii and the Philippines and Caribbean countries, and now we have this kind of quasi-empire, which is military bases all around the world. But when you have that much land, you have to hang on to it somehow. Well, we figured out a way to do that, is we filled the land with immigrants. And that was the beginning of the American dream. You know, we told people in Europe, hey, there's land over here for the taking. Come on over, fill it up, make it prosper, and all that. You know, share in the goods, share in the spoils. You know, like in some countries, like my parents came over from Norway, and they had back in the old days, they had kind of like real estate boomers going around Norway saying there's plenty of land in America, you know, where Norway is kind of land short. And you had these real estate promoters going around telling people, come to America, you know, and we'll help you get there. And a lot of times their promises were not fulfilled when the immigrants came to this country. They found the land wasn't quite that great. But anyway, that was the American dream. Well, going beyond the borders, you know, it meant going to war. You know, actually, when you think about taking land from the Indians, we've been at war ever since day one. And the U.S. had this attitude of superiority, military superiority, and it lasted a long time. It lasted until the Vietnam War, which we lost. And our leaders have been trying to kick that, what they call the Vietnam syndrome, ever since. That's what they keep talking about. And you think there's enough land for all, enough resources, enough wealth for all, but apparently not so. Because in the last, we had a period of fairness that lasted from around 1950 till 1970. And then there was a decline. What happened was increased productivity did not bring increased pay. You had productivity was going up and pay was going down. And it's been stagnant ever since. Well, that productivity has turned into profits for the wealthy. So now we have a situation where people are struggling in the midst of this fantastic opulence. You have homeless tent cities kind of within sight of luxurious residential towers, apartment towers. And that is the reality of today, is that you have really horrible poverty. Some people are not sharing in this American dream at all. And but still, especially among our politicians and the loudest voices on the air, you know, Americans seem to be living in the past. They still talk about this American dream as though it was a real thing, and our politicians talk about it. One thing that they talk about America being the indispensable nation. And that was another point that Ray McGovern made, which I thought was very interesting. What is the opposite of indispensable? Dispensable. So if we are indispensable, that kind of implies that everybody else in the world is dispensable. And sometimes we treat our allies that way. We treat our enemies that way. But it's not working anymore. In fact, Russia and China and some of the countries in greater Asia are dispensing with us. This is a long, drawn-out process, but who knows how it's happening right now. Well, the American dream and the source of it is Donald Trump kind of brings out the worst. You know, he talks about, you've heard all the horrible things he's been saying. He's just more blatant about it, but our elites are sort of, they make it a prettier version of the same thing. Trump talks about making America great again, where Hillary Clinton comes back with, well, we never stopped being great. Well, when were we great anyway? When the U.S. stole African lives, when they stole Indian land, when they stole the sovereign nation of Hawaii, is that when we were great? Apparently our warriors, our Washington warriors, seem to think so. And one of them, Robert Kagan, was one of the prominent neocons. He's come out with supporting Hillary Clinton for president. Robert Kagan is married to Victoria Nuland, who is the works in the State Department under Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. And Victoria Nuland was the was instrumental in this little coup that happened in Ukraine a few years ago. She was the cookie lady in Ukraine, passing out cookies to the protesters. Some of them were honest protesters against a corrupt ruler, who was elected, by the way. And some of the others were some little neo-Nazi elements, including snipers. So we look at Ukraine now. Ukraine is collapsing, like Iraq, like Libya, like Syria. And so this neocon war effort, which has been going on, is still going on, is has had terrible results in Syria now. Finally, we have peace talks, and a strange thing happened in Syria was that Russia took some decisive steps against the Islamic State terrorist, kind of copying what we've done elsewhere in the world, you know, a lot of heavy bombing and whatever. Interesting thing is, so far at least, the Russian actions have succeeded where the U.S. has failed. Yeah, this is something we ought to really think about. I don't know whether this will last or not. We don't know. So far, it's brought about a kind of a ceasefire and some kind of political talks going on. And apparently, this has got the Washington Warriors are really, really upset about this. They are seething. They really hate it that the devil incarnate, Mr. Putin, is succeeding where their strategies have all failed. And they are trying to sabotage this whatever is happening in Syria at all costs. And they're doing it behind the scenes. And it's very possible that Hillary Clinton is part of that. Who knows? I mean, in the past, she has been very ready to go to war. She was, instrumental in the war in Libya, which has been a disaster. So, America's war is not working. Oh, another supporter of Hillary Clinton is Madeleine Albright. I don't know if she was the one who coined the term indispensable nation or not. She used it. Of course, everybody knows that she was the diplomat who said that the economic sanctions on Iraq were worth it, even though they killed, by all counts, 500,000 people or something like that. To Madeleine Albright, it was worth it. So... they say, the U.S. has been compared to our strategy is like if you have a big hammer, the world looks like a bunch of nails. So if you want to describe the outcome of our military strategy is we have the big hammer and the world is full of bent nails. Sometimes a war hits home. For a long time, these wars we fought never hit home because we were surrounded by ocean and very hard for enemies to get to us. But that is not happening now. You have 9/11, of course, and you have all these migrations which are hitting the U.S. as a result of our wars in Central America has disrupted those nations, and people are coming here for that and for other reasons. You have Europe is being inundated by migrations from people fleeing our wars in Libya and Syria. And Afghanistan, Europe is sort of, as NATO allies, they've been sort of forced to go along with our big hammer strategy, and they are suffering the consequences. President Obama seems to be trying, he occupies a very equivocal position. He's trying to avoid war, it looks like. At the same time, he's going along with some kinds of wars, drone wars in particular. And Ray McGovern brought out a very other interesting thing, that apparently President Obama was talking with some of his wealthy supporters, and they called him out on not being... fulfilling his promises that he had made when he was campaigning. And President Obama got upset. He got up and said that, what do you want? Do you want me to go the way that Martin Luther King did? Now, Ray McGovern heard this from a source that he really has a lot of confidence in. And that source heard it from somebody else who said they were there. So we have a kind of a hearsay thing, but you have one excellent source, according to Ray McGovern, and that source heard it from somebody else. So there we go. I mean, that could be one reason why Obama is trying to, he goes this way and that way. Caller wanted me, I got a message here that a caller wants us to know that the wounded Ukrainians were killed or wounded from the same sniper on both sides. In other words, the same bullets were fired. Yes, I've heard something about that. I'm trying to find out more about it. Just recently there was a story about a sniper who took shots at the police in the former Ukrainian government, and also against some of the protesters. And this was a way of stirring things up, and it forced the elected president Yanukovych to flee Ukraine for Russia. Yes, we do know about that. I think we should know more about it. So that's another interesting fact that Ray McGovern brought out 2 weeks ago, something we should all think about. As we said that, with resources, that we use up a big share of the world's resources, and people sometimes were getting away at the time that George Kennan was writing. People thought that resources could go on forever. When the first settlers came to this continent, they saw this huge landmass full of resources. They can, probably thought that it would go on forever. It doesn't. We live in a finite world. Everything has to end sometime, and there are limits to growth. There was a very good book that came out back in 72, I believe, about limits to growth. And they talked about resources that had definite time limits that were being used up at different rates. And they also talked about sinks, which is places to dispose of waste products. And, like a landfill is a resource sink, or garbage dump, or the ocean, or a river, and we sort of thought, well, we can just keep on dumping stuff in the oceans and the rivers and landfills, and we can, no end to this. Well, now we find out that you can't keep dumping stuff into the sky without changing the climate, and there are limits to growth in two different ways. And so as far as resources go, the main resource that has powered this country has been oil. It's interesting to realize that back in 1859, the first oil well in Pennsylvania struck oil at 69 feet. And since then, there have been all these gushers in Texas and Oklahoma. Well, all that easy oil is gone. What we have now is drilling under the oceans or fracking, which was supposed to provide another oil boom, but that is faltering. A lot of fracking companies are going broke because they produce so much oil for a brief period of time that it created a glut, plus Saudi Arabia is going all out in its little resource war with Russia. And so you've got a temporary oil glut, and the price has gone way, way down. And so that is why some of these fracking companies are going out of business. It's very interesting that one of the leading fracking executives, I can't think of his name right now, but he was head of Chesapeake Energy Company, and he was indicted the other day. And then the day after that, he got in his car and he drove headfirst into a freeway wall or something like that, and killed himself. People think it was intentional because he kept speeding up and no seatbelt. It almost seems like a paradigm of what our economy is trying to do, speeding up into a concrete wall. So if we have a few minutes left in this show, if people want to call in with comments or questions, the number is 503-231-8187. So that definitely there are limits to growth, and they are going to hurt, because the big question is, what happens if there is no growth? How do we pay all the debts we have? Not just the government debts, but all the personal debts that people have. If the economy is not growing, it means that it makes it that much harder to pay off money that people and governments owe. And if you can't pay it, well, how do you deal with that? You can go bankrupt and default, and that is what some people see, is they see kind of like, like these fracking companies, some of them are defaulting right now or going bankrupt. Well, if one of them goes bankrupt, maybe the bank who has their loan gets stretched, and if it happens often enough, banks they default. And so you have this kind of a chain reaction, one default after another. And nobody really has, you think that through. Where does that end? I mean, how many defaults can you have before the whole economy collapses? And this is sort of maybe today's American nightmare, is a chain of defaults where the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. We have Don on the line. Hi, Don.
Hey, Per. Hey, it's my third call today, so I'm probably over my quota.
Oh, that's okay.
I appreciate it.
As long as you got something good to say.
But I'm a paying member, so I hope that helps.
That's good. Okay.
Hey, I want to talk about McClinton there, and I believe that his car was hijacked, because we know now for a fact you can hack into cars and into their computers and take them over. This has been proven. There's two videos online from a professor in San Diego State that took over a car. It was 1,000 miles away, and you can watch the video, and he actually runs the car.
Uh-huh.
So my feeling is they took his car, just like Princess Diana slammed into that pillar. Another example is Michael Hastings.
Reporter. Oh, yes, I remember that, the reporter.
Yeah, listen, they took over. First, they were electrocuting him in his house using these directed energy weapons. And then he runs out of his house. He sends an email to a few people. And then he runs out of his house, jumps in his car, and they put a bomb in his engine, just like Judy Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before, the only problem was, before he hit the tree, when they took over the car and were slamming into the tree, the person, they set up the bomb half a second too early. So that's why the engine flew out backwards, because that car was designed so that when it crashes, the engine goes right to the ground to protect the driver. But that proves they put a bomb in the car. And here's a third example is... the conductor in the Philadelphia train wreck, which is on the 30th anniversary of MOVE, that report that came out about a week or two ago, it talks about how his cell phone was disabled and he was knocked unconscious, he said, for a second. So they used a directed energy weapon using his own cell phone. They knocked him out. Then they hacked into the train and sped it up to that curb in order to kill 200 people, because then in 10 years we won't be talking about the 40th anniversary of MOVE. We'll be talking about the 10th anniversary of the Great
Okay, Pilgrim. Well, it's interesting. Now the big rage is driverless cars.
Yeah, that's even worse.
That'd be like an exploding, I don't know what. I mean,
get a bicycle.
Yeah, well, can they hack? Well, I know, maybe not. It's harder to hack a bike anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But they do have motors in the bikes now. Did you know that?
Yeah, I thought of getting one, but anyway, that's good information. And driverless cars. We haven't got to the. We're going to talk a little bit of our kind of. They talk about high tech. I think of it as hyped tech. You know, and some of it seems pretty useless. We live in a world where our soil and our water and our air is getting worse and worse. But a lot of our tech has to do with all kinds of funny gadgets, very expensive gadgets that really are for the wealthy, you know. As our technology seems to be misdirected, but that's something I'd like to find out more about. But anyway, so there we are. Technology is not going to save us. What's going to save us is that we're going to have to learn to live within our means, resource-wise. And so... that is for people who are so used to living high on the hog, that is a real nightmare, isn't it? So this is the thank you for all your calls, and thank you for your attention, and stay tuned for Air Cascadia on KBOO, your radio station. Thank you.
right. Coming up on KBOO this afternoon, we have... at 10, it will be Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. News, views, and interviews. Commentary and a bunch of jiggery pokery. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with our host, Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's Between the Covers. We'll hear a piece from the series Book Waves with host Richard Walensky. And we'll talk about the recently departed Umberto Eco, leading semiologist and novelist and the author of the best-selling book, Name of the Rose. And at 11:30, we'll hear Black Book Talk with our host, Patricia Welch, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African-American authors by African-American authors. Thank you so much, KBOO members, for your ongoing support. As always, you can go to www.kboo.fm and become a member today if you are not already a member today. The time is 10 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Air Cascadia. Portland, up next, Air Cascadia.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, the KBOO from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day. Deliver 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs over feminist focus, and female DJs and all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th from